From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. I'm here with Robin Hilton. And also in the studio with us today to play guest DJ is Yusuf Islam. If you don't think you know Yusuf Islam, I trust you know him by his stage name, Cat Stevens. Cat Stevens put out a series of inspired and intimate records in the 1970s. Tea for the Tillerman was my personal favorite. In 1976, he almost drowned off the coast of Malibu. In his panic, he shouted, "Oh God, if you save me, I will work for you." He recalls a wave coming and carrying him ashore. He converted to Islam, changed his name, and left the pop world after one last album in 1978, and then not another until 2006. Now there's a new record from Yusuf Islam. It's filled with great old blues songs and new original tunes. The album is called Tell 'Em I'm Gone. Robin and I will play songs from that record, and Yusuf will pick music that's been a big part of his life. I wondered about his family and if he grew up with music around the house.
Well, it was always there. I mean, there was, by the time I was born, you know, there was a piano in the middle of the, you know, living room. It wasn't really big enough for that kind of thing, but it was a grand, well, it was a small grand piano, and it was a gift to my sister from my father. So that was there all the time. Nobody knew how to play it.
But I thought I was going to hear a great story of your father playing a life-changing song.
No. But Mum used to, you know, occasionally with her one finger, you know, do some of these old lullabies from Sweden, because my mother was Swedish.
And so your father's side was?
Greek Cypriot. Yeah. So that was like the Greek weddings, you know, like bouzouki. And in fact, that's an interesting link, because my brother from my father's first marriage, George, was a bouzouki player and a violin, so he used to play at all these weddings. And so I suppose it sunk in at some point, maybe, that, you know, this was possible.
It can't not have some effect.
Right.
And so what about radio, and where were you as a child?
We were living in the middle of the West End of London, and anyway, you know, people used to come there for a night out, you know, but we lived there, you know, all the time. So it was always full of shows, you know, the coffee bars, clubs, cinemas. It was all in that area.
We're talking here maybe in the late 50s, early 60s for
you? Let's say the 50s, because I was born 1948, so about the 50s.
Yeah.
And so music was all around. So musicals were very big as well with me. In that environment, it was like... you know, it was just across the road. There was a theater, and I used to stand on the stage door and listen, you know, to the music coming out. So that was kind of, it was everywhere.
Some of the classic musicals, that's what you know, like the Rodgers and Hammerstein or those musicals?
Yeah. Well, you know, Gershwin, Porgy and Bess was very big
for
me, because my sister had the record. And then West Side Story just blew it all apart. That was it. For me, you know, me and my friends, and, you know, we just kind of made up a gang called the Belts, you know. Anyway.
Because the Jets were taken.
You know, and actually, I think Bernstein had a big effect on my music, because my music in the early days, when I started, you know, doing it and making it, he was a model for me, and it was very staccato. I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the passion of the Spanish music as well used to affect me a lot.
And the storytelling too, I would think, through song.
Can you think of a song that we can connect the dots between what you did and what you heard?
One of the all-time, you know, classic songs for me was a song called Somewhere. You know, and that song was just like, it was everything to me.
Oh.
It was everything. Yeah. And then later I heard and I learnt that one of my favorite, obviously, the Beatles. You know, who can not love the Beatles? And John Lennon must have written this, being inspired. I think I read it somewhere. Somewhere. It was called "There's a Place."
I never thought of that. So the song "Somewhere" goes, "There's a place for us somewhere," and then the Beatles song. There's a place. Well, can we actually play it? Because you don't want me to sing anymore.
No, I really don't.
Like.
We'll be right back.
Is there any chance when you heard songs like this around on the radio that you wanted to play them? Did you have a guitar back in 1963 when this song was around? You
would
have been like 15-ish.
Just lit up my life, you know, it was just music. I'm obviously trying to catch as much as we could on television, on the radio. I never had my own record player, so I used to borrow my sister's, and then she
older
got,
sister
elder sister, and she then got Twist and Shout, you know, and that was played to death, you know.
And when did you finally buy or own an instrument of your own?
I think I was about 15, and my dad was kind enough, you know, to lend me, or to give me £8, you know, £8 to buy my first guitar, Italian thing. And that's where I sounded terrible. I sounded awful. I said, I'm going to give this up. And then it was about a month or two later, I was trying to get the chords. I gave up. And then I picked it up again. And you know what? It all started working. It was kind of like a thing which just became natural. Mm-hmm. And I was perhaps trying too hard in the beginning. And then that's where it started. And then I started transposing what I learnt on guitar onto piano. So that's how I learned the piano.
Ah, and what can you remember some of the songs that maybe the first ones you learned?
I was so bad at playing other people's songs. Well, you know, that I started writing my own almost immediately. Oh. But Twist and Shout was like La Bamba. You know, it's like three chords. Yeah. It's very, very easy. You know, so that's probably where I started.
So having an older sister, did she turn you on to music that you hadn't heard before?
Well, it was... she had a kind of cross of classics and smoochy, you know, like Frank Sinatra, Nat King Cole, that kind of stuff, you know.
And, we need a smoochy channel.
Yeah, oh my gosh, yeah.
And but she had these classics like Beethoven, you know, and Tchaikovsky, and I loved those. And I used to love painting while listening, you know, to those records. I was watching all this landscape happening, a musical landscape, and I was just, you know, drawing as I listened. So it became a big thing for me to listen while I was drawing. And I think that kind of led in some way in the future to me, you know, telling stories and painting with words and music, you know, and that's kind of like what I do.
Mm-hmm. You want to listen to something that was in your sister's collection?
Well, this wasn't, but it was one of my favorite all-time Beethoven. It's like the number one pop song ever written. It's Beethoven's Ninth. Yep, that's it.
Great. And we're going to play what version, Mr. Hilton?
This is from A Clockwork Orange, yeah?
Yeah, Walter Carlos.
Handed me a list of 100 songs, and I tried to predict what songs, Yusuf, you were going to pick. This would be number 99. I just wouldn't. I mean, right, Robin?
No,
I mean,
not at all.
It wouldn't
not
have
at
guessed, all. But tell me more what it is about this that, I mean, I love it, right? But yeah. but I wouldn't have connected that with anything that you do. There's nothing. I don't have a hint, you know?
Well, it just came... you know, electronic music was, it's like from another planet. And
yes.
Because of that, and because of the match of electronic music with Bach, you know, which is a mathematical, you know, what can you say? It's so perfect. And so those two things fused together made to me magic, musically, just incredible. And then I tried starting, you know, with my own little Italian organ, trying to make these sounds, and, you know, no, I couldn't do it. And then Moog, you know, was coming through, and various things, various instruments, of which I tried to learn, but very difficult.
Mm-hmm. I was hooked on Bach, the Wendy Carlos album that really turned me on, or Switched on Bach. Switched on Bach. That
All those Moogs, yeah.
Yeah, really turned me into music, too.
Pretty wonderful. I love the image of you painting to the music, and you did many of your album covers. Were they watercolor? What did you work in?
Yeah, it was watercolor. I couldn't get a grip of oils. It took too long to dry, and there's so many other things, and it's smudged. Whereas, I don't know, somehow I got away with watercolors much easier. So, yeah, I used to paint, and you know, my first ambition, I suppose, before the musical one, was to be an artist, you know, like my uncle from Sweden, who was an abstract artist. You know, in those days it was kind of new-ish. Mm-hmm. So that was another ambition of mine, which kind of sunk into my music somehow, because I ended up, Chris Blackwell, you know, the owner of Island Records, when we were thinking about an album cover, he said, well, because he knew I painted, he said, well, why don't you do it? I went, really? You know, this is great to hear that from a music boss, you know?
I think it really defined you. It made, back then, when those records came out with those watercolors, there was nothing else that looked like it. You know, a lot of the record covers were done by companies who try to suss what it was that fit the artist, but here it was. It already, I mean, that's what, why Chris Blackwell probably said that was, it is your essence is in that. And it really did capture the soul of those albums, very much so.
Did you ever have a song that started off with you as a painting, and then the song grew out of a painting?
Actually, yes. When I learned, probably late in my life, but anyway, I learned that if you spun, you know, a kind of a disc with all the colors on it, it would turn white, you know. Mm-hmm. And so that was the theme for my song, Into White.
I'd love to hear that right now.
Let's listen.
I build my house from barley rice, green pepper walls. Of paper wood, windows of light, and everything empty in into white. Acres of sky, a brown-haired dog mouse, if one dropped by, yellow Delaney would sleep well at night, with everything empty in into white.
No, not yet. It's all right.
It's okay. We'll put the entire song, if we can, up online. There's so many things that happened when I heard this song. And first of all, when these records came out, they were the most beautifully produced records. The clarity of the guitar was unlike any other guitar record at the time, honestly. I worked at a summer camp in the 70s, 1970, I guess it was, and I was a camp counselor for, you don't know this story, I was a camp counselor.
Well, I know you taught a music appreciation class
I did
7-year-olds or something.
I did that too.
poor children, oh dear.
I've tried to find some of them since, but haven't been able to. I think they're all staying away from me. But one of the things that I did was I earned $50 $1,000 after a whole summer's worth of work, working with 6 to 8 year olds away from their parents for the first time, $50. And I took that $50 because of the sound of the record and the music that you made, and bought myself a guitar and tried to learn.
Wow.
And learned your songs. And it was a wonderful thing to play other people's music, not just listen to it, but actively do something with those things. And affect my life. I eventually wound up playing music and being a musician and stuff. And I like music. I mean,
I'm feeling this slightly domino of where you hear that music, you get into it, you pursue a life in music, you hire me for this job, I meet my wife, we have a child, and it's all because of this.
You had no idea.
Well, that's good. I mean, I think that you are kind of oblivious to a lot of this, because when you're creating, you're just doing it naturally, and you know, the fusion that happened with that record, and you know, the sound and Alan Davis and his guitar style,
yeah,
and how it kind of just perfectly matched my more organic sort of strumming, and Paul Samuel Smith, who was like the ex, you know, bass player of the Yardbirds, but he had moved into this producer field, it was just all happened so perfectly.
Was it he who brought the strings to the table, or did you, with your love of classical music, bring the strings?
It was me, but they're always sparse. They were always sparse, yeah, because I didn't want to go back to what I had in the very beginning of my career, which was a lot of band, a lot of noise, and a lot of too much arrangement. Mm-hmm. So in a way, it was kind of a marrying together of my knowledge of my love of classical music and the simplicity of my demos, which is what I wanted to capture.
We talk about music and painting, and one of the songs on your list, We Just Can't Resist. We'll just play this, and you can talk about it when we come out.
Streets of Rome are filled with rubble, ancient footprints are everywhere. You can almost think that you're seeing double.
Of course, is the band playing When I Paint My Masterpiece from the 1971 record Cahoots, a Bob Dylan song. We're talking with Yusuf Islam, Cat Stevens, about his music.
So we talked about the clarity of the sound in your guitar and how nothing quite sounded like that at the time. And Rick Rubin, who worked with you on this new record, Tell Him I'm Gone, he's someone I think of who brings a very distinctive sound to records. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about working with him on Tell Him I'm Gone. And
pick a song.
And pick a song for us.
Yeah, well, I think first place, I think he was interested in working with me, and I definitely was interested in getting him on board for this album. But I think he kind of envisaged me coming with a bunch of songs which is sort of similar to Tea for the Tiller Man. I mean, that was, I think, the direction he thought we were going to go. But I had all these blues songs in my pocket. Mm. And I said, you know, these are the things which interest me now. Anyway, he kind of didn't about turn. You know, he turned around and he said, okay, we can work with this. And then, you know, somehow the musicians they picked were really perfect, particularly Matt Sweeney. Yeah. Who'd been working with a group called Tanara Wind. So he had a kind of African bluesy approach to things. And one of the songs I wanted to really get under my belt was this song, Take This Hammer, which is, you know, the title song of my album, Tell 'Em I'm Gone. And because Lead Belly was one of those, you know, first iconic blues players who I could play, you know, because it was very simple. All the chords are like three chords, you know, and that's it. So this was one of the first songs I ever learnt on the stairs of my art college, where I should have really been in the lesson.
Painting that masterpiece. Here we go.
Take this hammer and carry it to the captain. Take this hammer and carry to the captain. Take this hammer and carry to the captain. You tell him I'm gone. You tell him I'm gone. Now if he asks you, was I running? If he asks you, was I running? If he asks you, was I running? You tell him I was flying. You tell him I was flying. If he asks you, was I laughing? If he asks you, was I laughing?
Yusuf, have you ever had the pleasure of seeing Tanara Wind perform live?
Yeah, we did in L.A. last time.
Amazing, isn't it?
Oh, fantastic. And what
that ringing guitar, for those who don't know, that nice ringing droney guitar, the modal guitar is all.
It's great. And nobody understands what they're saying.
It doesn't matter.
It goes straight to you, you know, and because they're freedom fighters, if you like, you know, for me, with music.
Yeah.
It's great.
You want to pick a Tanara Wind song for us and
yeah,
well, you know, people should know this band if they don't.
Yeah, for sure. There was one called Amasakul and Tanari. Beautiful.
That actually, 2003 or 4, that record came out. It was one of the first records mm-hmm. I heard of that band. And, yeah, sure. Let's do it.
مساء أكل انت ناري ورهي جرو التكو انت شمار ياضو تندني شمار إباد التفوق ياضو تندني شمار إباد التفوق
مساء أكل انت ناري ورهي جرو التكو انت شمار ياضو تندني شمار
ريت ملت تجروتي قد تكون ريت ملت تجروتي قد تكون
كم الساعة أكون انت ناري وريت جروت تكون شمار عياد وتنسي شمار فارق شمار عياد وتنسي شمار فارق تفون
اغني سنة كان بتروح سنة غديها لنا ما ننتغوق سنة غديها لنا ما ننتغوق تجنتي فوسن اتا جواستيني تجنتي فوسن اتا جواستيني
مساء كل تنري
I remember one Sunday morning in
exactly what I was thinking of.
We were in a music festival called Bonnaroo in Tennessee, and they opened up the Sunday morning, lights coming up, and there they are.
It had been the four most exhausting days of our lives
right.
at that point. You know, starting work at about 9 or 10 in the morning and going to bed about 3 or 4 in the morning, And then that Sunday morning, it was just the most beautiful morning, and the band started playing. It was just the perfect way to start the day. I've got goosebumps just thinking about it again.
This new record that you have is full of original songs and full of songs that you love, that you've wanted to take on. We've played one that is Lead Belly. Mm-hmm. How about one of yours?
I kind of hit it somewhere like around the middle when I was picking a kind of track list. But then everybody said, that song is so good. You know, so I thought, well, maybe we should stick it up first. You know, so it became the first track on the album called I Was Raised in Babylon. And I had two versions. This was the version which, after playing the first version in the studio with Rick Rubin and Richard Thompson was with us.
Mm. Not a bad combo.
Not a bad combination. Mm. But then... And then I realized the skill of Richard in the kind of folk mold. I said, no, let's try it this way, because I had this other version, and it just started to fly. And of course, the words, like a little critique, you know, about civilization. It's one of the best, I think, one of the best tracks.
I was raised in Babylon. Our priest taught us how to worship the sun. Oh, where did we go wrong? They used to call us civilized. Those days are gone. I came to God, the Pharaoh. Bring him wine and women. Oh Lord, where is he now? We used to call him the highest till the wave took him down. I was born in the Holy Land. They told me it was by God's command. Oh, where are the others from? I thought that we were the chosen. Must have been wrong. I love to march with the Sultan and his diamond turban. Oh Lord, then the world took hope. Let go the rope of God for a handful of gold.
There's so much going on there, that, and it's so simple and spare. All of the background sounds, some percussion and so forth. What, describe what is going on and how it came to be.
Well, as I said, we sort of got onto this other arrangement, and I just played it through, because it's such a kind of modal thing that Richard immediately sunk into it.
Yeah.
And I said, well, okay, and it goes here, and he goes, and then, and that was it. Like, I think we did one take just to get to learn the song, and the second take was it. You know, that was it. And then we had a percussion guy come in, and we just let him play from beginning to end, and that's what it is. He's just picking up all these different instruments. And, just
and the percussionist on that, who is the percussionist on that?
Rick brought in a guy called Lenny Castro, and he just like, well, we just played him the track, said, yep, okay, and he just went out there with all these bells and things and created the ambience. You know, it's unbelievable how it all happened within, you know, a couple of hours.
Well, that's when you know something's really working right.
Yeah.
Did this record work different for you than what you had been doing? In other words, did it come together in ways that maybe had a little more magic to it?
Well, I had a kind of rule with this album that I wanted to get like at least 7 songs done in a week, you know, and I just made everybody conform, you know, to that kind of timetable. And because of that, it became live, you know, very live. Otherwise, you can spend years, you know, spend so long in doing a record. I don't want to do that. I just want to get it out, because it had a live feeling. It had a kind of vital, you know, mood that I wanted to get out, and that was it.
Yeah, you can bet Lead Belly didn't take a long time recording those songs.
Very quick, very quick.
I was thinking about Lead Belly. I'm thinking about classical music, all this stuff that has been this soup that is you. And you are a soup.
We all are, I guess.
Yeah, minestrone, I suppose.
Can you recall hearing a song that took you in a direction in life that you never would have thought of, or made you think about music in a way that you never would have thought about music before?
Well, it's difficult to say, because the Beatles, you know, just took most of the credit for that. For just driving me towards music.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was the ultimate primal scream, I think, of Lennon on Twist and Shout, mm-hmm. that just set us loose. If you think about punk music, forget about this was the beginning of just, you know, releasing that incredible pent-up energy in our generation.
Well, we played There's a Place earlier in the show. The flip side of my 45, which was in America on a little a label that I never owned another record by, Tolly Records, T-O-L-L-I-E, was Twist and Shout. So there you go. Let's play it.
You look so good, you know you got me going.
I hear this, and it's such a celebration of the body, right? I mean, we talk about the music of the mind and the heart and the spirit and the body. And I, Yusuf, I think, you know, when I listen to your music, you may have the most reflective, thoughtful, beautiful voice, you know, of any I've heard. And I'm trying to connect this music that for, you know, for me is very spiritual, very thoughtful music, music of the mind and the heart and the soul with... But this song that is just all about the body. It is all about the body.
There you go.
But maybe in your mind that finds its way into your music in its own way.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's revolution. It's revolution in one way or another, whether it's spiritual revolution, whether you're going reflectively to try and, you know, change things, whether it's your life or, you know, or this world, if you can try somehow. But this did change the world, you know, so it's kind of, there's the thread. It's like something that changes the world.
Yeah.
This just set us free.
Do you remember where you were when you first heard that?
Yeah, it was in that little living room with the piano sitting, you know, in the corner there, and it was on television, all black and white in those days. I mean, consider, you know, that I was born in a time when there wasn't television, you know, and where we are today. So in those days, it was like black and white television.
Yeah.
And it was Thank You Lucky Stars. That was it.
Thank You Lucky Stars was a show in England. Yeah, it was
in
like
UK.
Their top of the pops kind of of television show. Our Ed Sullivan show.
Exactly.
Except more pop music.
Wow.
Yeah. What did your parents think of it?
Well, they stomached it, right?
Stomached it.
Well, they were too busy in the shop downstairs, you know, because we had our shop on the ground floor.
What was the shop?
It was a cafe, you know, sort of like restaurant cafe called the Moulin Rouge, you know, suave. But it was all sandwiches and cakes.
Why don't you take us out on a one more song? Song you're choosing.
Well, you know, I mean, we're, you know, if you look at the times we're living in, you know, I'm talking about... We're doing this tour called Peace Train Late Again, and so you know, so this is one
Doggone
of the,
it.
This is a song that I think maybe somewhere in my subconscious, you know, must have driven me to writing that song Peace Train. But it's one of the most beautiful songs by The Impressions called People Get Ready.
Oh, there's a train coming, picking up passengers from coast to coast. Lovely to have you here. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you.
So we're going to connect the Isley Brothers, who made the popular cover of Twist and Shout before the Beatles, with the Impressions, another great band in the same wonderful era. And your tour on that late Peace Train is in November-ish?
Actually, it's December. We're starting in Europe in November, and we'll be here in December.
Fabulous. Yeah.
And you did a Tiny Desk concert for us today that I will remember the rest of my life. So people, look for that.
Yeah.
Get that up soon.
They might even have me crying.
In the background.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Thanks.
I enjoyed it very much, Bob.
Thank you. I'm glad you were here. Tell 'em I'm Gone is the new record, and it's really just a joy to listen to you. I hear that golden voice. It's gotten a little deeper, maybe over a little
semitone.
Yeah. It sounds great. Thank you, Yusuf Islam. His new album is called Tell 'em I'm Gone. I'm Bob Boylan, along with Robin Hilton for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.
Just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the dealers humming. Don't need no ticket, you just thank the Lord. So people get ready for the train to Jordan. Call